Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. I'm Crosby Kemper. I'm the director of the Streetcar Support Association. No. So most of you probably know my position on streetcars, so I will not entertain you with that tonight, except to say that I do love 19th century transportation. Tonight I want to say something about the American Public Square and the library's mission to inform and bring the best kind of civic engagement to you as citizens, as voters, as an informed community. And Ambassador Alan Katz, who I believe is actually in Portugal tonight, has created the American Public Square, originally in Florida, the Village Square, brought it to Kansas City, to UMKC, and to the library to look at national issues. Most of the national issues will be, forums will be held at UMKC, and the local issues in the library, both at the Plaza Library and at the Central Library downtown. We've done a couple of these before. We're very happy about this. We've been doing things with the Citizens Association and with many other organizations in town to try and highlight and in an informed and civil way what our major issues are, and give you the detail and the things and the opinions that you need to weigh to be able to understand these issues. So, having said all that, I'm now going to turn this over to Kerry Coogan, who will introduce will give you the rules of the road for tonight's discussion, and we'll introduce the panelists. Ladies and gentlemen, the Director of Public Affairs at the Kansas City Public Library, Kerry Coogan.
Thank you, Crosby. I'm the Director of Public Affairs for the Library. I'm also on the board of American Public Square, so I'm wearing two hats tonight and really happy to be here. And thank you all so much for coming tonight on this cold night. And I also would like to say I have the least exciting job tonight, and that is to explain all of the rules and what will happen tonight as we go through the evening. So this is the second in a series of four programs presented in partnership between American Public Square, as Crosby alluded to, with Kansas City Public Library. And we're pleased to have this partnership where we look at local issues. And tonight, with the streetcar and public transportation is tonight's topic, obviously. And then continuing in March with public education. And then in May, we'll have a program about tax incentives and economic development. First, though, I would like to thank Burns & McDonald, who is the sponsor for tonight's event. Okay, so here's how it's going to go tonight. Included in your playbill are a question and fact sheet. If you have a question, or you're questioning whether something is actually accurate that you're hearing up here, if you fill that out on the form and raise your hand, then one of our volunteers will come and collect that from you. So I'd like to introduce now Jeff Fendorf, who will be our roving reporter for tonight. He's right here. We raise your hand, Jeff. He's going to be picking up the fact checks and questions for our panel. And any one of you can ask any question. Just write it down, and it will be collected by Jeff and the volunteers. I would also like to introduce Chris LeBeau and Scott Curtis. They are both UMKC librarians and our fact checkers for tonight. They're seated right over here. There is a green slash red card that will be flipped once a fact check is available to be read. So as things are being said, we actually are going to be checking the facts to make sure that everything is on the up and up. And finally, and this is really important, I want to acknowledge David Westbrook, Cynthia Wheeler, and Nick Piroff, who will have control over our civility bell. They will ring the bell if the language of the conversation becomes less than civil. And then we have one rule, and that is after I leave the stage, of course, no more clapping after that. We don't want any clapping. Okay, now it is my pleasure to introduce tonight's moderator, Steve Klika. Steve is the 3rd District Representative of Johnson County, Kansas Board of Commissioners, as well as a partner with Keystone Futures. That's a management consulting business. Commissioner Klika has over 30 years of transportation experience in both the private and public sectors. He is the chairman of the Kansas City Area Transportation Authority. He's a member of the Johnson County Parks Board and a member of the Kansas City Convention and Visitors Association Board of Directors. Please help me in welcoming Steve to the panel tonight. Thanks.
Good evening. And I really appreciate all of you joining us tonight. This is a very important topic here in our community, not just here in Kansas City, but as you've been reading in the paper, it's becoming more and more of a topic throughout our whole region here. Tonight, I'd like to introduce our panelists who are joined us this evening, and then we're going to, I'll take the seat and we'll get started. First, I'd like to, on my far right, is Hoonyap Kim, is an associate professor in the UMKC Department of Architecture, Urban Planning and Design. Dr. Kim received his PhD in Urban Planning and Design from the University of Washington and a Master of Urban and Regional Planning from the University of Hawaii. Dr. Kim has experience in urban transportation systems, urban spatial structure, travel behavior, and traffic safety. Thank you, Dr. Kim, for joining us. Next to Dr. Kim is Patrick Tui, who is the Western Missouri Field Manager at the Show Me Institute, a Missouri think tank dedicated to promoting free markets and individual liberty. He previously operated his own corporate market research company in Maryland and then relocated to Kansas City in 2005. He served as an aide to U.S. Representative John L. Micah, Republican from Florida, in Washington, D.C. He's developed research methodologies for clients such as Monsanto, Anheuser-Busch, the National Sheriff's Association, Christian Coalition, the Center for Alcohol and Substance Abuse, ABC News, NBC News. Patrick received a bachelor's degree from Boston College in 1993. Thank you, Patrick, for joining us. And finally joining us this evening is a rural Kansas native, David Johnson, who first discovered the Crossroads District in 1992 and bought his first home there in 2004. A longtime advocate for rail in Kansas City, David started kclightrail.com, a platform for transit news and urban core advocacy, and was instrumental in laying the groundwork for the first streetcar election, educating, registering voters, putting signs in storefront, representing residents in court, at City Hall, and on the newly formed Kansas City Streetcar Authority. David also serves as the vice chair and outreach lead for the Kansas City Regional Transit Alliance, a nonprofit organization that educates the public on transit accessibility and gathers public opinion, communicates, and advocates to expand, enhance, and improve today's transit options. David, thank you for joining us. As Carrie mentioned earlier, our topic today is going to focus on starting out with the streetcar. Followed up, we're going to get into the general topic of public transportation in the Kansas City area. And if that's okay, what I'd like to do is that I think it's appropriate for all of us to get a little bit of 101 on streetcars, rail, and different transit options that are available to the general public, not only here in Kansas City and around the world. And we've asked Dr. Kim to join us to give us a perspective and kind of give us a basis here as we begin our discussion on the streetcar and then into public transportation. And with that, Dr. Kim, I'd like you to start out. How does define for us from an urban planning and architectural standpoint, what is a streetcar?
Okay. So, I mean, there are many options in public transportations, metro or heavy rail, subway systems, light rail systems, and the bus systems, and streetcars, of course. But each system actually has multiple options. For example, streetcars. It's streetcars with exclusive right-of-way, or shared with regular vehicle traffic. Also, even bus rapid transit, also bus with the exclusive right-of-way, or bus transit that mixed with traffic. Also, there are each basically system has basically hybrid systems. You can actually clearly define, well, this is the streetcar system and this is the light rail, or this is the bus system. So we basically need to somehow see things broadly. When we discuss about public transportation, you cannot just say light rail versus streetcar versus bus. Problem actually in planning, in transportation planning, streetcar system has been considered as a public transit with the limited service areas that promote the economic development. Here, economic development means more retail or service-oriented basic activities. Many actually municipal governments across the nations, they have considered streetcar as a kind of also way to promote tourism. But largely, we have not considered the streetcar as a mass public transit, which means you can carry lots of people at one time, like light rail or subway systems. So that's what basically I can tell you.
How when you talk about streetcars in our communities, not only here and across the country, we get into the issues of rail. Mm-hmm. Heavy rail, light rail. Mm-hmm. We get into BRT and bus rapid transit. Could you explain kind of what those are as compared to what the streetcar of what we're dealing with today?
Actually, the streetcar system we have in Kansas City is basically, it has shares of vehicle traffic. So it is basically very typical kind of streetcar systems that you can actually find in the Portland, in Oregon, and Seattle, in Washington, and also in Dallas, Texas. So it's pretty kind of typical kind of streetcar systems. But when we talk about streetcar, we basically need to somewhat differentiate modern streetcar versus basically heritage streetcar, which means that the streetcar system we had many years ago, even in the early basically 1900s, that lasted until 1950s or the 60s. Did I answer your questions, sure. Basically?
I find it interesting, and I'm probably going to date myself here to a certain deal, to a certain point, as being one of the baby boomers. Mm-hmm. I'm finding it interesting as we're beginning this topic in streetcars and so forth. It's amazing how history is repeating itself. We ended up World War II transitioning from streetcars that progressively over the following two decades basically found themselves going out of business, being replaced with the bus systems. Mm-hmm. A lot of that's tied to changing in demographics there, communities, urban planning, design, suburbanization, and all those things going up. Mm-hmm. But now here we are, as we move to Kansas City, we have history has in fact repeated itself. And we now have started in April, we will be opening up or starting our first streetcar system at a cost of approximately $100 million.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And I'm finding that this is not very different. We're not very different than the other parts of the United States. Mm-hmm. Is that true? You find that the case?
Yes. So but basically, I do not believe that the people who actually designed Kansas City streetcar system as a way to dramatically change transportation systems in these metro areas. So that is basically, that is true in everywhere in the United States, not only in the United States, in many other countries too. So the streetcar system is basically that has been used as a way to improve streetscape, which means the street, the shape of the basic street, the feeling of the street. Many people think that transportation may not affect people's basically the travel behavior or the businesses, but no, actually it can change a lot. I can tell people about the sense of place, usually, when we talk about streetcar systems. Why people go to plaza? The plaza, because it has a basic unique sense of place. That's why people go to plaza. the same thing. It's a streetcar system usually. That many people think that when we talk about streetcar, they just think about the rail and the cars. No. Usually, streetcar system involves a lot of streetscape improvements that basically improve the overall kind of the feelings and environment surrounding streetcar system. So that affects basically improve the kind of or create kind of sense of a place that people, you know, attract more foot traffic. So that basically stimulate basically the businesses and stimulate activities. That is basically that's basically real intentions behind streetcar systems, and then that's what actually are accepted by many people in other places.
Thank you. Let's turn the table here a little bit. And David, I'm going to ask you, besides just the love of trains, why? Okay, thanks. Transit. Why the streetcar? Why the passion that has turned you into a strong activist in promoting the whole streetcar development as well as the public transit?
Well, I've been pretty active politically my entire life, so this is just another issue that I've become very passionate about. And my first introduction into the streetcar project was because I live and work on the route. So it may be only 2 miles, but it's actually one of the densest parts of the city where the streetcar is running, and that will lend itself to ridership and economic development, as Dr. Kim alluded. So that was the entrance for me into the project. I actually originally was just planning to kind of cover it. I have a journalism background, and so I was planning to cover it on my blog, and as I have all the other proposals that have been put forth since 2006. And so, yeah, I just looked at it like another story, and then some other advocates, so one of which is maybe in the audience here, approached me and my friend Matt and said, you guys should get personally involved in this project because you both live and work on the alignment, and you know all these people downtown. You could have an impact on whether it moves forward. And so we started organizing the three neighborhoods where the streetcar runs through. That would be River Market, the Central Business District, and the Crossroads, where I live, and started organizing residents in favor of the project, educating them so that they, when the city came to design the project, they would know how to answer some of the questions that would be asked, which street it should be on, you know, what type of vehicle to use. And so the answer from people who weighed in was pretty loud and clear. They wanted a modern vehicle. They didn't want, you know, we're up to date, as they say, over and over. And so we picked a modern vehicle and chose Main Street, a single street. I think Dr. Kim can probably tell you about some of the other projects that have been built in other cities. They tend to take a little more scenic route, if you will, through cities, but we took a very linear approach, which is more like a transit project and less like an economic development project. And I think we'll see a benefit from that. I feel like our project is different than some of the others, other than being mixed traffic and a modern, you know, smaller vehicle. It does take a more transportation approach. It's integrated with the bus system. There are shared stops with the buses that were designed that way. We had to get a waiver from the Federal Transit Administration to design that, and all indications are that's going to operate quite well. So the integration with the system, obviously serving Union Station, Transit Hub, the River Market, Transit Hub. So all those things kind of lead me to believe that we're a little bit different and a little more thoughtful about designing the system as a transportation project. And it is actually funded with federal money that comes from the transportation budget, so it is technically defined as a transit project.
David, in following up, going back to the first election that caused the development of the first line here, or the first phase of that, first of all, what was the percentage passage? Educate me. I don't know myself.
So
what percentage of those voting on it pushed forward on it or approved it?
So there were a couple of stages in the voting because the project itself, to take one step backwards, was born out of a failed citywide light rail vote in 2008. That itself was born out of a failed citywide light rail petition initiative, that actually passed. And I'm not going to mention the guy's name, but you know who it is, right? His plan, his back to the napkin plan, passed by a small margin. I voted yes because I think, like a lot of people who followed this issue and voted on it multiple times, they were frustrated by the inability of a plan to move forward. And so that plan passed in 2006. The city looked at it, said we can't build this for the money that's being collected in the plan, and so we'll put our own thing on the ballot. Then that failed in 2008 by an equally small margin. And so right in 2009, a year after the vote, the ATA, actually, under Mark Huffer's leadership, approached the city and said, you can carve out a part of this plan and implement it as a modern streetcar for a fraction of the price, and you can use this state's authorized special district called the Transportation Development District and carve out basically what's called a value capture proposition, meaning the primary funding source for the project comes from the value of the property next to it, right? So you're not spreading a large project like this over the entire city, which voters obviously said they didn't want the city to do many times. So, and this special district is used widely throughout the state, mostly for strip malls, ironically, near highways, right? But it was available for transit projects, and the streetcar project.
That was the mechanism, and
the chosen mechanism for developing the local funding source. And of course, there's federal money as well, which I think is about $37 million of the $100 million. So some of that comes from the feds, and the rest comes from the special district. So the only like truly local money is about 60-some million, of which is bonded out, over time to pay for the project.
Going back, what percentage, and so the
to your
public,
question, the initial vote was to form the district. It's considered a political subdivision in the state of Missouri, which is kind of like a school district, so it doesn't have the same boundary as the city. As we all know, the school district does not. So you have to have a vote to form the district to set it up as a political subdivision. Mm-hmm. So that vote was in August of 2012, and it was 69% yes.
Okay.
And only the people that live within the district, much like the school district, can vote on issues that affect that political subdivision. And as a consequence of that, only the people inside the district would be paying the special assessment, which is about half of the revenue
so
that the district generates.
So that was the only vote required to move this project forward, or was there a second vote?
There was a second vote. So
and that was
a little sort of oddity of the, thank you, Missouri legislature, is that you have to vote twice.
Okay.
So you have to set up the district, and then you have to vote to authorize the revenue sources. And in this case, there's a special assessment on all property, including municipal property, commercial and residential as well, and then a retail sales tax of 1%, only within the district. So if you are not living or spending any money within this district around the streetcar, you're really not contributing that much at all. There's some city funding coming from a transportation sales tax that was authorized by the state of Missouri in the 70s to create the ATA. And then there's federal funding, which of course is just for the capital, not operations. As you're well aware, but those in the audience may not know, the federal government is quite generous with capital funding for transit projects, but they generally do not pay for operating expenses. So the district pays 100% of the operating cost for 25 years.
And what was the vote on that?
It was about the same. I think it was like 63%. So obviously the difference being one's a procedural vote, the other one's I'm actually going to pay this much in taxes. So that's how I explain the difference between those two votes.
And three major reasons why do you feel like those voters supported this? Just give me three basic.
Well, I think a lot of people were frustrated that we've tried this many times before and failed. And so this seemed like a very doable, workable, small bite at the apple, if you will.
History of inaction, okay.
Sure. And, downtown is a little bit more urban than most parts of Kansas City. So people who live down there expect urban amenities, transit being one of them. And third, I think we did our groundwork at the grassroots level, raising awareness and telling people why it's a good idea. So I think people were motivated to vote for it because of that as well.
Well, with that going on, Patrick, I'm going to kind of turn it over to you a little bit. You represent a think tank that has questioned the viability of a streetcar concept, that is questioning the level of funding, the $100 million cost in building that 2 mile. Why don't you help educate me as to why? Give me your thoughts on that one.
Sure. Well, it's an awful idea.
Huh?
It's an awful idea. I'll be quick on that. And let me go back and reflect on what we've heard earlier. So we talk about the first election on streetcar. In fact, when I first moved to Kansas City in 2005, a neighbor explained to me during the 2006 vote that, you know, in Kansas City, we vote on streetcar about every 2 years. And of course, a lot of those votes were no. Every city-sponsored vote has been no, with the exception of one. And so when David talks about an inability to move forward, it was the voters of Kansas City didn't want it. That apparently is the technical hang-up. And so what proponents did after losing time and time and time again is they gerrymandered a small district. You asked about percentages. I think there were only about 600 votes total to commit the city of Kansas City to a $100 million project. One pundit has called that the most undemocratic election since the Pendergast era.
Is that you?
And it was not me, but okay. It was an excellent line. I'd gladly take credit if it were me. So what we did was, we kind of gerrymandered this district. We committed the city to pay hundreds of millions of dollars. Now Dr. Kim has made the point that streetcars are not a transit option. They're not considered that. And in fact, Councilman Russ Johnson, who was ahead of the Transportation Committee at City Council when this kind of bubbled up and passed, made it clear that this was not about transportation. This is about economic development. The problem is you will not find economic literature anywhere that says that streetcars drive economic development. What happens in Portland and Kansas City and everywhere else is that the cities lard the routes with tax abatements and subsidies that could just as easily be responsible for any kind of economic activity, any increase in economic activity. And certainly in Kansas City, we've put millions and millions of dollars downtown. And so what you're doing is the taxpayers are subsidizing all this. We see new things, and people say, well, the streetcar did this. The streetcar hasn't done any of it. It's the subsidies that do it. And then you kind of ask yourself, at what cost does this become worthwhile? Dr. Kim said that many streetcar systems are considered involve a lot of streetscape improvements. The look, the feel. Are we spending hundreds of millions of dollars simply as kind of a exterior renovation of downtown, calling it transit when it in fact isn't? Now we'll talk in a few minutes about what a transit system ought to be. Ultimately, it's moving people from where they are to where they want to go. But fixed rail, in the age of Uber and autonomous cars, fixed rail doesn't take you where you want to go. Fixed rail takes you where urban planners want you to go. And the history in Kansas City of spending money to get, we want to hit it out of the park, right? We double down on all these big projects, and we want to do it with the streetcar because we want to extend something that hasn't even opened yet. And we chase that dream rather than taking that money. And by the way, this isn't being built in a void. The city only has so many resources to invest in infrastructure and all sorts of things, but we lard it all on these projects, and we hope to hit it out of the park. And what we're seeing in Charlotte and Washington, D.C. and Atlanta is that the dream is never realized.
Let's go. The concern I have relative to the existing streetcar concept, it's only operating for about a 2 mile line. It's pretty much restricted between the River Market area and through the downtown area. I'm as chairman of the Public Transit Authority here, our focus as we move more into a regional concept here, we have been given a statistic here that is scaring the heck out of me. And that is our public transportation system only serves about 18% of workers of where our workers, I mean our employee, what should I say, our employees work. So basically, from what I understand, is that our system is only, the access is limited because we can only, we're only servicing 18% of our employers throughout the metropolitan area. So our thrust from the regional standpoint is, number one, access and job access. We need to get that number up in order to get people access. So going into the streetcar issue, I'm sitting there scratching my head and going, 2 miles, is that going to help achieve our overall objective?
No.
Well, then I go into the second deal. Okay, we're looking at a second phase of the streetcar, and correct me if I'm wrong, that would take it from where it is, where it terminates in downtown area, and then shifting it further south toward University of Missouri, UMKC. Am I correct with that as far as the future plans?
That would be the very obvious extension. I think most people during the August 2014 expansion election, even voters that I talked to on the east side said, well, why don't you just go to the plaza or UMKC next?
And would that, you know, David, would that start promoting where my concern is starting to move people to where jobs are, kind of getting that origin destination point for people and job access?
Well, we have to remember that transportation can do, transportation projects can do a lot of things, right? There's a, in fact, up until recently, the federal government, if you were asking for funding, required you to go through a process that had you ask these questions. What do you want this to do? What is the purpose of the project? What do you need from this transportation project? And, you know, the city had its process for that, and they determined that, you know, that I can't remember what they were, but they were, you know, like an economic development was one of the goals of the project, right? So for anyone to expect that economic development is like some sort of, like, false profit kind of thing from the project, that was the city's goal, stated goal from the very beginning. They wanted to increase investment in the urban core. Why is that a bad thing? Most people in this room, I think if you care about this topic, know that the population of Kansas City, Missouri, south of the river is, continues to bleed, right? So there's a whole host of issues that cause that, whether it's declining home, you know, the size of families, or tearing down properties that may actually be useful. So there's a whole host of reasons for that. But one of the reasons that I was attracted to the project and a stated goal that the city had was attracting people back into the urban core. And every indication is that that's happening. Otherwise, you would not see people building large-scale residential projects as close to the street line or streetcar line as possible. I mean, there's a reason for that. It's not just because they're dangling a carrot of a TIF in front of a developer. They're attracted by the market, right? And so the market was at 98% occupancy for downtown residential. So that's very attractive to someone. And sure, yeah, it would be attractive whether the streetcar is there or not, but that adds to the attraction. And that's, you know, an important thing to consider.
Let's flip the table here a little bit.
Well,
Patrick, obviously that probably gets the hair on the back of your neck going up a little bit there. How do you respond on that?
Well, I think David's exactly right. It is not the streetcar that is driving this construction, as he said. And David says that it is not just because we're dangling TIF or abatement in front of them, but that's actually not correct, because a lot of these developers sign affidavits in their but-for analysis saying, were it not for public subsidy, this project would not happen. And so absolutely, they say under oath that give me the money, taxpayer, or I won't build. Now, we pretend that it's the streetcar doing it, but there's a paper trail for these projects. And so it becomes an inordinately expensive project that does not move people from where they are to where they need to be. In preparation for this event, I spoke with the head of the Urban League, and I remembered correctly something she had said some time ago, which is there are a number of people on the east side of Kansas City who are able to work, who want to work, who don't have the transportation option to get down to South Johnson County where the jobs are. Streetcar doesn't help them. It doesn't help them at all. And so if we're going to talk about transit, if we're going to talk about meeting the needs of people in the urban core, It's not spending $100 million to serve 22,000 people downtown who won't use it to commute. It's about moving people where they need to be. And one last thing, by the way. What's important about bus rapid transit, like the Truce line, and if you haven't been on it, I recommend it. I take it right from my house to work, is that it is flexible. And so as cities change in ways that you can't predict, population centers grow, job centers grow, bus rapid transit allows you, or any bus transit, allows you to pick up and move. The problem, and proponents of fixed rail say this is a good thing about a strength of fixed rail, but the problem with fixed rail is that you place your bet on that route, and you're stuck with it. And so you will constantly, not just in the short term, but you will constantly have to lure people along those tracks with subsidies. You can't let the free market do what it wants because you're stuck with that route.
But Patrick, in argument to that, you're raising the issue as far as subsidizing this form of public transportation, mm-hmm. and I'm going to go a little bit broader on this deal. But at the same point, isn't government subsidizing other avenues like our highways and our streets? And are we not finding ourselves that as we're wrestling through our departments of transportation and our street departments, that all of a sudden the cost of expanding streets, redoing streets,
Absolutely.
And cleaning up the infrastructure, when we look at just saying $100 million for a streetcar, and trying to say, okay, I'm not sure that's really cost effective, and what we're looking at is basically putting the track down, getting the rail cars in place and doing that. But I guess I wonder if we balance the ledger sheet here a little bit, are we slowing down expenses elsewhere, such as street modifications, street capacities, and things like that. And I don't want to be stupid enough to think that transits can all of a sudden take 15 or 50% of the traffic off the roads.
No, no.
I'm trying to...
Well, streetcars won't take any of the traffic off the road.
Yeah.
So that much we know. It doesn't reduce congestion. It doesn't reduce car travel. It doesn't take people out of their cars. So it does none of those things. But yes, you're absolutely right. Transit is a public good. It is worthy of public investment. But as Dr.
Can I quote you on that in the future?
Absolutely.
And
that's not, that's not revolutionary for us to say. But the point is, as Dr. Kim pointed out, you have all sorts of different options. And so you choose wisely. Which one accomplishes the goals you have in a way that's cost effective? And it has to be said that Kansas City doesn't have unlimited resources. Every decision we make on transit or any public good comes at the cost of spending somewhere else. And so,
and I agree, because at some point there's give and take. It's the balance. And from a government's perspective, whether it's street, rail, buses, how are we going to balance that transportation? If we're dealing with mental health, it's an issue. Are we going to deal with mental health through that, or are we going to deal with it through our criminal justice system? It's a balance, and how do we properly...
But the problem is, streetcar is the most expensive. I mean, unless we're buying everybody jetpacks, streetcars are the most expensive option. And not only are we spending all that money for the streetcar, but then we're giving people money to move into buildings along the streetcar. We're spending money in order to spend money. It will take an inordinate amount of money to upkeep, and it doesn't even do the job of transit.
So, Steve, I wanted to go back. You actually asked me about, I think you were talking about job access, right? And it is deplorable. I mean, the region has sprawled so uncontrollably, and if you're an elected official and you're in this room, you should be ashamed of yourself that we have allowed the region to sprawl.
I won't take that
sprawl.
Personally.
yeah, sorry. Forget it. That's a good thing that I've forgotten about that, Steve. But, and that makes it really, really difficult, not just to serve with transit, but to serve with transportation in general, right? So the amount of money Kansas City will have to spend maintaining its, and that's the region, not just Kansas City, Missouri, maintaining the road network we've built is just astronomical. I mean, and we don't have enough population to cover that in the long term. So the region should not be getting any bigger than it is, physically larger than it is right now. That's my personal opinion. And you see that borne out with job access, right? So as we continue to put jobs on the fringe, and the people that need the jobs aren't necessarily on the fringe, how do you connect them? And it's a regional problem that requires regional leadership and regional funding. And that is not at all what anybody promised the streetcar would do. It was never stated as a goal that they would help job access or stitch the entire region together. I mean, to your point, it's 2 miles. So, and it's expensive, too. So we've got to decide as a region, and that includes Johnson County, Cass County, like in the entire Kansas City region, if we are going to invest in this. And everybody needs to make an investment, because putting it all on the backs of Kansas City, Missouri, which is currently how the bus system operates, over 90% of the funding comes from Kansas City, Missouri, sales taxes, that's not sustainable. And clearly it's not connecting all the residents in the region with all the jobs in the region. And that's much bigger than the streetcar conversation.
Let's take a break there. I'm looking at Jeff, and it seems like some in our audience here want to start weighing in here. And so, Jeff, why don't we, before we go on to the next part of this, I appreciate the questions coming forward.
Okay, yeah, they've been rolling in here all of a sudden now. Actually, this is a question for Dr. Kim. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us how you think we should value, and I guess I'd probably say evaluate, the current streetcar and its positives in terms of expansion, economic development, other factors?
And I basically want to ask you these questions. What has been done in Kansas City for the last 3 or 4 decades? Nothing. Am I exaggerating? No, nothing has been done. I think that the streetcar system has been the first major project that somehow to invest the things in Kansas City. I think that's my interpretations. Have you ever been to other cities, other big cities? I think that Kansas City is one of the most boring city. It's dry. I think it's in my opinions. But don't get me wrong, but it's not really an attractive place to visit other than plaza. So I think that I see the streetcar project as a kind of first effort to do something for this Kansas City. I think that's my opinion. And secondly, transportation projects, every transportation project is not only about transportation. The transportation related to job, built environment, economic development, even not only economic development, residential development, everything. Transportation affects everything. So if you only look at the transportation, only based on the cost-benefit mind, then we may not see a big picture. I think that's kind of that's what I want to say. So if we really want to see kind of dramatic change in transportation systems for this metropolitan area, then I feel that we basically need to think big. Streetcar systems may not resolve the regional transportation issues. Of course, there's one example. The Toronto in Canada, their actually streetcar system basically covered many parts of the area. So that's the only city, as far as I know, that basically maintains kind of old, relatively old streetcar system and still use that as kind of one of the major transportation, basically the infrastructures. And if you go to Toronto, then you'll see that the bus transit system and streetcar systems and other, it's all basically work together. So when I see a public transit, of course, there may be some cost issues, but the thing is, I want to see these things as an alternative. Actually, I'm from Korea. Actually, I was born and raised in Korea. Over there, you can see many different types of public transportation and even motor, you know, the vehicle. People choose the mode of transportation depending on the type of activity, depending on the time of travel, right? And depending on the weather conditions. So they actually, so nobody is basically fixed to one particular transportation mode. So people actually, I believe that people appreciate the type of alternatives and choice they can make. And when you see rail transportation, I can see that, yes, it's very expensive. But at the same time, I want to ask you these questions. Do you see, have you ever visited St. Louis? If you go to there, and then if you ride a bus, you will see that most of people who ride a bus are black. It's not easy to find a white. If you ride light systems over there, you will find that a lot of people are white. It's not easy to find a black people. What does that mean? In the United States, unlike many other societies, we have very strange stigmas associated with bus transit. It's basically type of public transit that people may not want to be associated with. So that's, to me, still, it's very difficult to understand why. But the thing is, here in the United States, there's a clear, basically, kind of displeasures on bus transit. So one of the, kind of, that's why actually people, many planners, basically want to promote rail transit as a way to basically promote public transit use overall. So to me, light streetcar system is basically, I feel that the first real effort to somehow do something for this Kansas, in this Kansas City. But is it really appropriate as a way to promote large-scale public transit development? I have, maybe not. That's my opinion.
Right. Jeff?
We've touched on this a little bit, but I have a couple questions about if we're really looking. Sorry. I have a couple questions here about if we're really looking at trying to move people, not just economic development, shouldn't we be looking at bus rapid transit or a bigger light rail system?
Let me throw that out to our panelists here.
I'll take it. I mean,
let's start here, and then Patrick, this will probably tie into as what we're talking about the bigger picture on public transportation.
So the organization that Steve chairs the board for has been the sort of a leader in bus rapid transit on a sort of cost-effective scale, right? So the concept of bus rapid transit, I think, was invented in South America and the Transmillennia. I can't remember what country that's in, but basically they apply rail-like amenities to a bus, giving it dedicated right-of-way level platforms, off-board ticketing so that the transaction of paying the fare when you board the bus doesn't slow things down. What Kansas City has done has, they've chosen to, I guess, water it down a little bit, for lack of a better word, to build in the amenities that are cost-effective that can still increase ridership in a particular corridor. So we've been very effective at implementing that model. You know it as MAX, right? Everyone likes MAX. That was my introduction to public transit in Kansas City. I took it down here tonight. It's very cost effective. There's no question about that. I think the Main Street MAX was a $28 million project, and it instantly boosted ridership on Main Street 50%. And I think that's been maintained over time. And then the same thing on Troost, upgrading an existing high ridership corridor with these rail-like amenities And then next is Prospect, I believe, which is still in the project development phase, not currently funded. But we're doing that as well as Streetcar, also on a small scale, and mixed traffic, because it's really hard in this town to dedicate public space to anything other than a car. If you've worked on bike issues, if you've worked on pedestrian issues, and certainly if you've worked on transit, dedicating space to transit means you take it away from the car. And that is a losing argument in almost every city hall in this region, in the halls of the Mid-America Regional Council, is an impossible, seemingly impossible, intractable problem for advocates of options.
Dave, let me go over to Patrick here for a moment. Patrick, is the concept of BRT much more palatable to you from
Absolutely.
Your perspective?
Absolutely.
And why?
Because it serves transit needs. It is flexible. It is cost-effective. There's nothing wrong with a public investment in transit. Nothing wrong with that at all.
And $28 million on
a
deal.
For the amount of people it moves, absolutely. For the service it provides. But the idea that because we do all this, we ought to then do streetcars. And the idea that part of the value of investing in streetcars is so that white people will feel comfortable riding transit is not something that we should be pouring $100 million into. You know, in Los Angeles, what happened years ago was they expanded streetcars, and in order to pay for it, they started gutting the money that was going to buses, to the point where the NAACP sued the authority, the transit authority, and the transit authority restored the funds. So again, our professor of urban planning wants Kansas City to think big, sure. But you know, in the 1970s, the sprawl that David bemoans was considered cutting edge. We're going to have all these satellite towns and villages around Kansas City. And ultimately, through the car and through sprawl, it's been Kansas Cityans, free people, acting freely, choosing to live where they want. Now they've moved out of Kansas City. Perhaps Kansas City has made a lot of poor financing, a lot of poor decisions on where it spends money, how much it collects. Maybe that's what chased people away. Maybe the infrastructure we offer, maybe the education system we offer isn't worth staying here for and paying for. So people leave. So then what do? We resent them voting against streetcar. We resent them not wanting to use public transportation, and so we try to force them into it. We want to create an urban core. We want to pour all this money into it. What Kansas City needs to do if it wants to be a successful city is to spend people's money efficiently, create opportunities for business, and do what Overland Park has been doing for years, which is create a better alternative. But the idea of spending all this money for something that we admit doesn't alleviate transit is an incredible waste, and it takes money away from more important areas.
Jeff?
We've got a number of questions here about plans to expand the streetcar south to, say, UMKC or Brookside, so maybe this would be the time, rather than to ask a specific question there, to let you talk about that a little bit.
And I guess I go, we started talking about this a little bit, David. There is talk about extending the leg or...
I'm always talking about it.
Yeah, I should have.
As you might imagine.
But as far as moving it up to, in the next phase, up to UMKC, is that rumor or is that actually a discussion underway?
So the official process, the city embarked on a study in 2012 and completed in 2013 called Next Rail and subsequently North Rail to study north of the river. And that plan, I think, had 8 corridors initially, and then they narrowed it down to 3. 3 is what went in front of voters in a slightly larger, actually considerably larger, transportation development district in August of 2014. So those 3 routes, which would be extending the Main Street line all the way to the University of Missouri Kansas City campus, Volcker campus over here across the street, and east on Independence Avenue and east on Linwood Boulevard to, I think, a little over a mile on each of those eastern extensions, possibly 2 miles. So that plan failed, but it's still officially the city's expansion plan. And it was adopted in the Mid-America Regional Council as an expansion plan for the streetcar as well. Those corridors are actually part of the regional transit plan that's been on the books since 2000. Smart moves, right? 2007, I think, was when that originated. So these aren't just people drawing lines on a map. They're picking corridors that have existing transit ridership that would be have a cost per rider that's attractive, both to the federal government, who provides capital funding, and to the city itself making the investment. So, you know, I think it's obvious that whatever is proposed next would include one of those.
Your organization has made presentations on next steps, correct?
We're talking to all kinds of people about things that are possible with the, especially using the Transportation Development District.
Will you share those plans publicly?
We're talking to people about the Main Street corridor. Right. That shouldn't be a surprise to anybody.
So the presentation you made to the Downtown Council, will you share that publicly?
That is a presentation that just talks about extending the streetcar to UMKC. That's what I'm telling you right now. There's no secret in that.
All right.
So the answer is yes, you'll share it with us?
It's got a lot of boring financials.
I'd love to see the boring financials.
It's the same financials that were in the expansion plan you voted on in 2014.
Wait a minute.
You commit to sharing the plan you made to the Downtown Council public?
We're a simple nonprofit, so we don't have to share that information.
I'm not asking if you have to. And you're publicly funded. Will you share that plan publicly?
No. When the time is right, when someone decides that it's ready to go back to voters, then everybody will talk about it.
Okay. All right. Jeff, next question.
Well, and we actually have some fact checks here, so I'm going to stop there.
We have some fact checks. One of the questions was, did the old streetcar system in Kansas City go out of business? Or was it purchased by promoters of bus and automobile transit and intentionally allowed to fail? Did find a little bit of information on the history of the streetcar system in a Kansas City Star article from November of 2013. Right after World War II, the streetcar had a ridership of about 136 million passengers per year. It gradually declined. The last streetcar was in service in June 1957, and the ridership had dropped to 46 million per year. And the business failed due to competition from buses and Kansas Citians' infatuation with the automobile. There was a question about Kansas City population south of the river continuing to bleed. Isn't Kansas City population growing? The metropolitan statistical area itself, which is Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas, in 2014 had 2,035,166 residents, and that was a 10.8% increase since 2000. Kansas City, Missouri itself had a 2.4% increase in that period of time. So the metropolitan statistical area is growing faster than the urban core. That's from U.S. Census data.
And my comment was specific to south of the river, so just for clarification.
And a question came up about a Marriott hotel took no TIF on their Residence Inn project within a few blocks from the streetcar route, and confirmed that the Marriott Courtyard Residence Inn that's under construction, which is a $46 million project, did not take any TIF funds. And that was through the websites of the Economic Development Corporation of Kansas City looking for TIF projects.
Thank you. If we have about 20 minutes left here, and I would like to see if we can kind of reshift the conversation here to the bigger picture, go beyond the issue of the streetcar and talk about public transportation as whole. Just as an entree into this, yes, as you mentioned, David, I'm the chairman for the ATA board. Over the last 2 years, we have gone through a, which I say we basically have imploded that organization to basically get refocused as to its original mission that was established back in 1965, and that was to serve the bi-state area of Kansas City metropolitan area in the service of transportation, public transportation. And it was viewed from a standpoint early then that it was better to deal with transportation on a regional basis versus having all these little programs going on. Well, unfortunately, we did not follow that, the intent of the original compact. And now, 1965, we're now at 2015-16. How many years ago is that, Dr. Kim? And we finally decided it's time to go to the original mission. With that in mind, we have brought together a number of our transportation programs together under the ATA umbrella to begin that coordination and the synergies that need to be done. But as we pull a goal forward, the question I have as chairman of ATA, the question I keep asking as we go around the metropolitan area, what should public transportation look like in the Kansas City area? And Dr. Kim, I'm going to bypass you on this one because technically you can give me all the right answers of what it should look like. But on a day-to-day basis, we have to deal with the realities of the different personalities we have in this community. And that's always challenging. And it same way when we talk about the streetcar. You have the ones who are passionate, go after it, get it done, and those who are sitting there saying, wait a minute, is this really what we want to do and how we want to put our money together? Let's talk on the bigger picture. What should public transportation look like from y'all's perspective in Kansas City? I'm going to start with Patrick on this one. He won't have that level of passion that you're going to throw at me, so we'll give Patrick again, a...
So let's rather than think of public transportation as transportation that is owned by the public, let's just think of it as policies and programs we put in place to make sure that the people of Kansas City or the region can get to the places where they need to be, and what can policymakers do to encourage that. So perhaps the first and most obvious is publicly owned transportation. What can the city do? I would encourage cities to. Obviously, they kind of project population changes. Where are people going to live? Where are they going to work? And work with a way that gets people from where they work to where they need to be. And that may be in their cars. That may be on buses. But maintain that infrastructure. I would ask that you come up with a plan that is nimble enough to account for mistakes you might have made or unforeseen circumstances. A big employer that moves in a part of town that you didn't expect. Certainly rail doesn't allow you to do that, but any kind of bus does. I would ask the city to be a little bit more welcoming of future technologies like Uber. We battled Uber and we battled Lyft. We like to think of ourselves as the Google Fiber City, yet we work to chase away innovation. Autonomous cars are coming. And so I think the city should look at all the different ways in which people move around and try to accommodate them, not pick one that, again, moves people not where they want to go, but moves them where urban planners want them to go. And so, again, it would just be a matter of try to be flexible, try to anticipate what's going on, but allow free people to move freely. And if people want to move out into the suburbs because of services or whatever, you come up with a system that meets their needs. If a vast majority of Kansas Cityans want to drive their own cars, which will probably be true regardless of what we say or want to do up here, then you've got to come up with a system that allows for that. But Kansas City simply does not have the problems of congestion that so many other cities in Korea, in Boston where I went to school, in Washington, D.C. where I grew up. Kansas City doesn't have the density, doesn't have the congestion problems that other cities turn to rail transit for. We don't have those problems. So those solutions won't fit for us.
With that in mind, Patrick, let me ask you this, the age-old problem here in Kansas City, and I think David kind of alluded to it a moment ago. to be able to start planning and developing even a nimble or a very flexible type of system, it requires dollars.
Right.
And it requires a set amount of dollars that we can plan on year after year after year. So the question I ask to you, are you favorable to the concept of having what David suggested, some type of a regional funding source to deal with that on a bi-state basis?
My answer to that would be meaningless until there was some particular...
I'm sorry?
My answer to that would be meaningless without some particular proposal. But I can tell you the Show Me Institute has examined the Missouri Department of Transportation. You know, they recently wanted to come to us. They recently came to us and asked for an increase in the sales tax to pay for transportation. And what we said was, no, we think a gas tax or tolling, some sort of user fee that puts the cost on the people who have the benefit. You don't necessarily get to do that with public transportation. Absolutely, if it's a regional need and the municipalities within the region want to do that, transportation is a public good and is worthy of investment. But that does not mean that every form of transportation that we can think of is worthwhile.
Thank you. David, how would you respond?
I think coverage is a huge problem. As I mentioned, the region is very large for not a lot of people, right? So covering the region with transit, with public transportation, is always going to be difficult, and it's going to cost way more than we're spending today, and that includes buses. I think the region, given how far many of the cities and counties have sprawled in every direction now, it's going to have to be a primarily bus system. It is today, but I think you're not going to get me advocating for streetcar to the airport. Like, that's totally not on my radar. I could care less. I take the airport bus today. It works quite well. It's $1.50, saves you paying the parking, and that's good enough for me. To me, I think everyone in the region has a choice. That's, to me, the fantasy transportation system, right? And to think that the hand of the free market is guiding everyone around in their cars, well, no. The planners have already laid out the roads for you. They're telling you where to go. They're putting traffic signals in place and telling you where to stop and when to go. So the whole thing is highly regulated, highly planned, and heavily subsidized. It doesn't matter what you're running around in. And Uber's a huge race to the bottom, by the way. If you think that there are going to be people driving those cars in the future, no. It's all about driverless cars and them eliminating the human factor from driving people around. So to me, it's about choice, whether you decide to walk, bike, use transit, or drive. But it shouldn't be so heavily weighted to driving, which is the system we have chosen to build today. The free market did not guide us into the car-dominated Kansas City. For people who are old enough to remember a streetcar-dominated Kansas City, that was a private sector thing in concert with the public sector, of course, that regulated it, was just as prevalent as the car system we've built today at a period in time. So to think that we can't do something different because we're Kansas City is total hogwash. Like, it's up to us to decide and to tell our elected officials what we want our transportation network to look like. And if they hear it loud and clear, that's what they'll respond to.
What if they say no repeatedly over the years? Do you listen? When do you start listening?
I'm not going to dignify that. That's because you don't vote on roads, right? So no one got the chance to vote on I-35, right?
Well, we voted on the MoDOT sales tax, and we voted it down.
That's right. Kansas City actually supported the MoDOT sales tax, by the way.
But we do vote
and it
on
included
roads.
Streetcar funding in it.
We do vote on roads. But I think that the time will come eventually. The many people think that the suburban, you know, towns, cities, as basically typical white, you know, middle class, you know, communities. No, that is not true increasingly. You will see a lot of low-income people, also minority populations, in suburban cities. In actually Kansas City metro areas, that is true. Increasingly, we see those things. So not only in transportation, even housing and everything. Each town in these 130 cities, municipal governments in these metro areas, they need to understand that everything is interdependent. I believe that the time will come. Mm-hmm. Because now is a moment, eventually. So the when people realize their interdependency on everything, the time, you know, they may begin to talk, and they begin a dialogue to deal with the many different issues. I think that's my expectation somehow.
Great. Jeff, let's get a couple more questions here before we get ready to close.
We had a question about spending money on streetcars versus spending money on parking garages, and what really is the difference between the city spending $40 million on a parking garage and...
It's a lot more than that, but yeah.
Sure. So you can say the city ought not subsidize parking garages, and that's perfectly fine. That's a defensible position to have. But streetcars do not take cars off the road. And so if you are frustrated with the city subsidizing garages, you do not fix that by subsidizing rail. You've now just subsidized perhaps two bad ideas, but you still have the amount of car traffic, you still have the need for garages. So again, that is a fair public policy question, but your solution is not rail transit.
Are you suggesting then, Patrick, from that standpoint, the city should not subsidize public parking? The market or the private business should deal with that.
That's a perfectly defensible position. That let the business owners buy surface lot, let them pay for it, and do that fine. And again, of course, cities make all sorts of decisions all the time. But the idea to say that we spend too much on roads, you can't deliver freight or emergency services, police, fire by streetcar. I mean, we have to have streets. The idea that we're going to move to some sort of,
you know, the streetcar is running in a street, right?
Well, not yet. So the idea that somehow a streetcar is going to replace cars, it doesn't. It doesn't take cars off the road. It creates more congestion. It doesn't alleviate the need for garages. It doesn't move more people around the city, and it certainly isn't cost effective.
Actually, so on on the parking garage issue, I brought this up during we had similar discussion on the radio yesterday. I brought that up because it's obscene how much we've spent and subsidized. And we're not just subsidizing public parking. We're subsidizing private parking as well. So, you know, it's much bigger than anybody wants to calculate. But the Business Journal The Business Journal actually did a calculation of this several years ago after a failed light rail vote. And what they found was that, A, we've been spending a whole lot of money subsidizing that publicly and privately, and that regions that have invested more in transit than Kansas City have been able to reduce that subsidy because there's a regional transit system for people to choose to have as an option.
I'm going to use an example. When I was running the Transportation and Parking Authority in Oklahoma City back in the 80s, we, as a public entity or authority, we built the downtown public parking structures to support the business and so forth. But what we did after paying the bond, the debt service for those garages and the operating costs, we took the excess revenues from the garages and subsidized the public transportation side. So we were promoting a little bit of a balance there. And at that time, a couple of years back there when I was there, we were able to fund our whole capital improvement program through the parking system. And the parking system provided the local match to the federal grant. So it's just a different perspective.
The free market would pick surface parking because it's cheaper to build and maintain. Yeah. So if you want a city full of surface parking lots, which we almost have, then go for that route.
Thank you. Let me go, Jeff, next question.
We've still got so many here. I think this is a similar one to one we got at the airport, which makes kind of a nice wrap up. And for any of the panelists, where do you think we'll be with this discussion in a year, 2 years, 3 years?
Are you speaking about the streetcar issue?
About streetcar and public transportation.
I would like to hold a comment on public transportation as we get to the end, and I'll give a snapshot of where we are from ATA's standpoint.
Okay, well then specifically for the streetcar.
For the streetcar. David, you're on the streetcar authority. How would you respond to that?
Well, opening the system is first priority, and so that's going to open in April if you hadn't heard. So then you'll have a chance to kick the tires. And then after that, it's anybody's guess.
Okay.
I expect we will, as I was told when I moved to Kansas City, we will vote on streetcars forever. I don't imagine that any of the expansion plans, whether David chairs them or not, will be approved. But we will be subsidizing our 2.2 mile plan, and we will be left with a lot of the legitimate transit questions we're asking right now, because streetcar doesn't address that. Now, hopefully, regionally, we're able to take a broader view and move people where they want to go and allow for them. Actually, rather than move people, think of it, just create an environment in which people can get where they want to go however they want to get there, rather than maybe a kind of command and control rail system. Here's where we want you to go.
Jeff? Turn your mic on.
It's on. Okay. I'm just looking at these. This is a question, again, kind of about bus versus streetcar. But the question is, we're looking at, you know, $28 million for the Main Street Max, the streetcar, $100 million for 2 miles. How about Max Bus on all proposed streetcar routes?
Let's do it. You got to find the money, though, right? So it's not free. So the level of service that you're providing on Main Street Max today only exists on a couple of other bus routes. So that every 10-minute service that you enjoy on the Max is expensive. Steve can tell you how much you think it costs to run 10-minute service on Main Street.
Oh.
It's in the millions, right? Operating the transit is where you always will run into problems. So you have to find another source, a larger source of operating revenue for transit, if you want the level of service that you have on Main Street, Troost, and Prospect. And the reason those streets have a high level of service today is because they have high ridership. There's need and there's demand in those corridors. The bus routes they run up north, very high cost because very few riders and the land use up there is not supportive of transit. Right? So if you make a market-based decision about our transit system, you wouldn't run any buses north of the river, by the way. And you wouldn't run any in Johnson County because the subsidy is very high based on the land use and the low demand for transit. So coverage has to be part of the equation. If you want to be equitable, that has to be part of the equation. You actually have to be equitable.
Yep.
It's required by the federal government and for good reason. And so you have to kind of weigh all that when deciding what you want to build.
Jeff, I in response to that, I think BRT, the BRT concepts are a high priority from the ATA standpoint, and you see those here. You see it in Kansas City and in the Kansas City area, but I know those will be questions that we'll be raising in Johnson County from Shawnee Mission, the Shawnee Mission Parkway, as well as the Metcalf. So I would like to see those things more active.
I presume the question, my hearing of the question was, can we run Max along the streetcar line instead of the streetcar?
I was hearing that it was, why don't we do more BRT, is that correct?
The way I interpreted the question, and I may be wrong, was given the fact that BRT seems to be so much less expensive per mile, why aren't we looking at extending that?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. Now, you know, proponents of the streetcar complain about subsidies and complain about the cost of transit, yet their solution is even greater expense and greater subsidy. So I think we can say that providing transit, even bus rapid transit, is expensive, but is it worthwhile? Is it worth the bang for the buck? Is it something that you as a private citizen would want to invest in? But the idea of saying buses are expensive and that's bad, so let me propose an even more expensive plan, it doesn't make sense to me.
But technically, actually, streetcar system, usually in general, you will not find the streetcar system that usually have more than 4 miles of service, basically, right? Distance. So basically, if we want to have streetcar system actually beyond that 4 miles, it may be challenging because of carrying capacity issues, which means the number of people who can carry it at one time, and then number of stops that you will have, right? So currently, usually streetcar usually have stops every 2 or 3 blocks, maybe.
By design.
Right,
it's
right,
not
by
required,
design.
Right.
But the thing is, so you can extend it, then if you actually want to really have like 1 mile, I mean, distance between the stops. That is usually typically, I mean, done by a light rail system. So Ryorakil proposed to meet the real purpose of encouraging foot traffic. And then, you know, thinking about streetcar system in that framework, then beyond the streetcar system, beyond building streetcar system beyond 4 mile service ranges may be very challenging.
So on that, I have something very important to mention about that. Yeah. So the city was very deliberate about choosing a vehicle that would be compatible with a light rail application, right? Mm-hmm. So the vehicles that are on the ground now testing can run up to 45 miles an hour. If you gave them dedicated right-of-way, they could go just as fast as light rail. It essentially is a modified light rail vehicle. So that was very deliberate decision made, and thankfully, so if we decided to make a system beyond just circulating downtown, that is very possible.
With that being said, I'm going to bring this panel to a conclusion here. And first of all, before we close this, I'd like to bring you up to date on the things that are going on right now with the KCATA. As I alluded to, is that over the last couple of years, we've started a redirection of the authority and its role and responsibility. The one thing that we have committed to is that we have a responsibility to promote access throughout the metropolitan area. We have pretty much taken a position that in the two major focus points that we're looking at, we want to move folks that have disabilities and challenges through the paratransit operations, and we're looking and we're expanding that. The second part of that is that we want to promote access to jobs. Now, simply put, while we sit there and go, rah, rah, jobs, 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 the idea there, if we are accessing individuals to jobs throughout the metropolitan area, we will have increased our footprint within the whole metropolitan area, which everybody will benefit. Those who need it for jobs, those who need it for grocery shopping or whatever it may be. By using that as the focal point, it will begin increasing that footprint throughout the region. The other thing I'd like to do is that there is efforts. We are promoting new services. A lot of people look at Johnson County and go, good gracious, what's Johnson County into public transportation? Well, as we decided to take a little bit more creative role in getting involved in transportation, and effective January 1st, we're basically infusing another $3 million into the public transit side from Johnson County. With that, we're dealing with a variety of options. Number one, we are going to be promoting our fixed route service and connecting, interlining with the metropolitan system, both in Wyandotte County and Jackson County. These routes will be evolving over the next 3 to 4 months. The other thing is, on the paratransit side, we have basically entered into an agreement with Jackson County where we are removing the boundaries for paratransit that anyone can go between the two counties. And we are merging all of our certification and dispatch functions. We're also concerned from Johnson County's standpoint when we're talking about density, that we are doing voucher systems to promote special need transportation beyond the core area of Johnson County. So all aspects of the county will be served, and we will be utilizing private contractors to assist us in that role. So those are just a couple different components here that we're dealing with. But overall, I guess what I'm coming down to saying here is that public transportation is becoming a more and more important issue here in our regional area. There is not one good way to do it all. So with that in mind, we've got to try all kinds of ways. And I'd like to make one comment relative to what Patrick mentioned about using technology and Uber concepts. In March, we will be unveiling what's called the Bridge Program, which is essentially Uber and transit mixed together. The riders will be developing their own route by calling in for rides or calling in for transportation. and we are going to pilot that in kind of the KU Med area, kind of through there. And if that turns to be successful, we're going to carry it out into various areas within the metropolitan area. So just watch that one and see how that develops. It's going to be interesting to watch. But what it's saying is that we're going to try all kinds of things and see what we can do. Now, as I bring it back to the issue of the streetcar, one thing I do seem to know, and the fact checkers can tell me this somewhere down the line, as streetcar programs do come online throughout the United States, a substantial number of them actually have higher riderships than what are projected. I don't know if that's because the planners are so great at going at this conservatively and keeping the expectations low, but as I've looked throughout the country, the ridership seems, the acceptance seems to be a little bit more in use. It does fall into place a little higher than projected. So it's going to be real interesting to see how this evolves with the first leg of the streetcar. But while on one hand we can sit there and weigh about the cost-benefit ratio here of the streetcar, we also have to remember is that there are individuals in this community that support this type of transportation. And from my own perspective here, as an individual that is promoting public transportation in the overall deal, I'm open to new, exciting, unique, different ways to move people around the metropolitan area. And with that, I'd like to thank my fellow panelists here for joining us in this conversation, and most importantly, for you taking the time.
Yeah. Thank you.